order, and today is April 9th. And welcome, everybody. We don't quite have the quorum yet, but we are going to go ahead and open a public hearing and see what we come up with members here. I guess we'll open up the public hearing on House Bill 2036.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2036 allows the Department of Transportation to issue group plates for groups that promote the prevention of wildfires. It further would direct the State Forestry Department to seek federal approval to use the image of Smokey Bear on those group plates. We have received a no revenue impact. We're still waiting on a word from fiscal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Mary Ellen Hawley. I'm going to go ahead and bring three people up. Mike.
Deitzel.
And Melvin Thornton.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Mary Ellen Hawley, and I am the President and CEO of the Keep Oregon Green Association, and I am here today to speak in support of House Bill 2036. Keep Oregon Green is a nonprofit corporation that in 1940 was created by Governor Charles Sprague and State Forester Neil Rogers to promote wildfire prevention and protect the timber and grazing lands and resources of Oregon. We are managed by a board of 36 trustees, many of whom have land within the areas that you represent. And before we go any further talking about the license plates per se, I would like to show you some fire statistics that we have gathered from the past 5 years and 2006. So if you would turn to the page that is marked 2006 wildfires by user, you will see here that the general public really is the number one audience that we need to target when we're doing our prevention messages and our marketing of that message. If you look at 382 general recreators or general public and the other people that live within the urban wildland interface, and then the motorists whose cars catch on fire on the side of the road and cause a problem or throw cigarettes out the window, then that gives us a large number of the public that we need to target. And turning that page over, the human-caused wildfires, this is a five-year average on this page, and you can see that we have had 1,043 escape debris burns in the last 5 years for a total of $4.37 million. Equipment use was 1,065 fires for a total of $19,000 to suppress. And going down to the miscellaneous fires include buildings that are burning within the wildland urban interface and catch the forest on fire, dumping hot ashes, spontaneous combustion, fires like that. You can see that there were only 608, but it cost $13.5 million to suppress those fires. Over the past 5 years, it has cost $45,249,000 to suppress wildfires in the state of Oregon. Keep Oregon Green has requested House Bill 2036 to provide a highly visible mechanism to constantly remind the people of Oregon of the importance of wildfire prevention. Our organization and its supporters are convinced that the group license plate with the decal displaying Smokey Bear and the words Keep Oregon Green will be a very popular among natural resource professionals as well as many other Oregonians, and will bring benefit to the state of Oregon in reducing the number of human-caused fires. As you know, Smokey Bear is owned jointly by the USDA Forest Service, the National Association of State Foresters, and the Ag Council, but it's managed by the U.S. Forest Service. as a fire prevention specialist within the Forest Service and later as their acting cooperative wildfire prevention officer in the national office in Washington, D.C., I am very familiar with the use and the legalities surrounding Smokey Bear. As a part of our cooperative agreement, I now manage the Smokey Bear program for the Department of Forestry, and we have worked together with the licensing manager back in the national office to make sure all regulations have been followed. The state of Ohio has already implemented a Smokey Bear license plate. This task of promoting our message is becoming increasingly difficult. In past years, it was a challenge to get our message to the traditional forest users. Now we're faced with getting our wildfire prevention message to an increasing number of people who live in and around these forested areas. This wildland-urban interface, so lovingly called the WUI, poses a double threat from people living in or near forests, as well as from fires started in the wild that spread to nearby residences. In either case, the result is potentially disastrous, but it's especially tragic because those results could have been prevented. The challenge continues as Smokey Bear and Keep Oregon Green grow older. Demand for our natural resources continues to grow, as does the population of the interface areas. There has been an overall decrease in forest health, especially on federal lands. The number of recreationalists who use our forests continue to increase. In the future, the need to prevent wildfires will be even greater. Smokey Bear is the most recognized icon, second only to Santa Claus, in the United States and thus Oregon. He is loved universally and has no political agenda. Regardless of what you may have heard in the media, Smokey's only message is to prevent unwanted human-caused wildfires. His message and his legacy are passed from generation to generation. His fame is carried on by people who believe in his mission. There are no costs surrounding this bill, save those that Keep Oregon Green will be paying. If you would turn to the page with the title Costs Associated with House Bill 2036, you will see what these associated costs are and the projected revenue that KOG would earn. And basically, it will cost us a little over $26,000 for the startup of this license plate bill. After we sell 1,000 license plates, we get 10,000 of that back. It costs us $3.05 for every license plate that we have made. And I've been working with the Department of Transportation on these costs. So this is what Lana gave me right from ODOT. And then the other costs there are initial program or application fees and programming fees, implement cost, and the printing of the license plates. In the end, once we have all that done and we have our $10,000 back, then each year we would get revenue of about $25,500 for 1,000 sets of license plates that are made. Coming out of that also is the Smokey licensing amount that we would have to pay in addition. This plate is perfect. This is the plate. It is the group plate. It is not a specialty plate. This is the group plate. We have a great-looking bear on the state plate with mountains and trees in the background. And with Smokey's image and our logo of Keep Oregon Green, what better way than a license plate to spread the message to Oregonians and our visitors? Chair Beyer and committee members, the Oregon Department of Forestry spends about $28 million each year just getting ready for fire. Our budget is approximately $350,000. The revenue from these license plates would help a great deal, allowing Keep Oregon Green more money to raise the awareness of the wildfire problem and then prevent the wildfires before the Department of Forestry has to suppress them. The income from these plates will provide marketing advantages to increase the awareness and bring about the behavior changes that we seek to reduce the number of human-caused wildfires. We can reach the goal of an interactive website for our KOG Ranger Youth Program, develop countywide prevention committees and pay their travel to countywide events, maintain presence at all statewide events, including county fairs, print the much-requested KOG placemats, and reestablish the KOG mud flaps. We know these license plates will be successful, and with that success will come a reduction in human-caused wildfires. Let's let those who know how to manage fire do the burning necessary to keep our forests healthy and green. But let's stop those fires that are caused by careless humans and get them to take responsibility for the prevention of wildfires. As Senate Majority Leader Dave Hunt said in this very hearing last session, it would be un-American not to support Smokey Bear and his efforts to reduce wildfires in this great state of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I ask you to support House Bill 2036 and help to keep Oregon green. I would be glad to take any questions.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hawley, I appreciate the comments about the nonpartisanship, but in my home, that's propaganda. Smokey the Bear is a Republican.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, did you say Smokey the Bear?
Oh,
Smokey Bear.
Smokey Bear is a Democrat.
Thank you, Representative.
Go ahead.
Chair Beyer, for the committee, my name is Mike Deichsel. I'm the Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. It's hard to top any of the details and the focus that Mary Ellen has provided. Just to let you know that the Oregon Forest Industries Council supports the bill. As Mary Ellen very graciously pointed out, though, it's everything you hear is about suppression costs. You don't hear about the resource loss out there. It's millions and billions of dollars going to suppression costs, but nobody really talks about the resource loss out there. And that's the nature of our members and the nature of our business. Also for all Oregonians, as far as dealing with the natural resource beauties of the state, dealing with clean air, clean water, wildlife habitat, jobs, tourism, they're all naturals and they're all destroyed by fire. And I firmly believe that the idea and the concept with Smokey Bear out there with these 3-inch decals all over the state, not just for Oregonians but for tourists traveling through our state, will show a commitment by Oregon citizens and the tourists to show that we really believe in wildfire prevention out there. Firmly believe that the cheapest fire that we can put out is the one that we prevented. But it's always seems so difficult. Mary Ellen deals with this every year. Is when budget time comes around, we can't afford to scrimp any on suppression budgets because those are the resources you need to put the fire out. And just by choice, prevention seems to take a back seat in many occasions. And I think this is just an excellent way for the general public and those natural resource professionals that want to take part in providing a little bit extra oomph to the prevention program as a way for them to participate. So we really urge your consideration and hopefully an aye vote for 2036. Just a natural Smokey on that nice state with the mountains and the trees. It just fits. I'd be glad to answer any questions as well.
Thank you. All right, Sandy, we'll go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. My name is Melvin Thornton. I'm with the Douglas Forest Protective Association out of Roseburg, Oregon, where we protect about 1.6 million acres of forest land. And each year we typically have about 80 to 100 fires, and of that about 75 to 80% of those are human-caused fires. Now, the most important thing that we do is, of course, stopping the fires that get started. But it is so important if we can get messages out there to people to not have that fire so that we don't have the homes in the wildland-urban interface threatened or so that the forest is not threatened every year. And Smokey the Bear has played an important part of that throughout the entire history of Smokey Bear. Got to be careful myself. Smokey Bear has played an extremely important part, at least during my career, of about 35 years with the Forest Protective Association, in providing a message to young children, which then grow up to become adults. And it was interesting. The other day I had a young lady approach me at a restaurant that said, you know, I remember you as a when you were providing some of the Smokey Bear prevention programs when I was a young girl in third grade, she said. And she said, I can remember that to this day. And she said, I'll always remember that because Smokey Bear does remind her of fire prevention. So I think the key part that I wanted to say today, and I'm not going to go over all the stuff I have in my write-up here, but the key point I guess I wanted to make is that by providing that visual icon to our youth at a young age, we have found that that carries on into their adult life. And when they are about ready to throw the cigarette out the window or they're about ready to go camping and they're going to have a campfire, hopefully by seeing either a license plate or other fire prevention materials out there, they will think twice about doing something unsafe. And a fire prevented is most certainly the best fire we can have. We talk about a lot of fires, and there was a lot of numbers that Mary Ellen talked about throughout the state every year. And that's that sounds like a lot, but yet again, it only takes just a few of those to make significant significant damages to our forest or to homes, and it only takes one to get away that will cause a major problem. So I get my message today is I hope you do support this. I think that is an important icon that people can see going up and down the road, and we'll remind them of that fire prevention message. So many of our folks that cause fires, about a third of them typically are not living right in the forest. They're the ones that drive to the forest from the city, and they don't necessarily have that drilled into their brain all the time until they see something. So I would encourage you to support it. I hope you do. We certainly do. And appreciate the opportunity to testify here today. And if there's any questions, I'm more than willing to answer those.
Thank you. Any questions from the panel? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Byron. I'll leave there soon.
Thank you. Representative Boone, it's good to have you back and in the committee.
For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I'll be really brief. This is a great bill. We tried to do this last time. Half the committee's up here. Anyway, I do support it, and I would actually buy the little sticker and put it on my car, somewhere next to the dollar horse. So I hope that you will approve this. This is a good program. Keep Oregon green.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Boone?
Thank you.
Mike Moskowitz, Kate Lighthall, and Gary Marshall.
Chair Beyer and committee members, my name is Mike Moskowitz. I'm a public affairs manager for Weyerhaeuser Company, and I'm based in Springfield. And I'm here today to support House Bill 2036, the Smokey Bear license plates. And if I happen to say the word, knock me down. It's a habit, an old habit. Weyerhaeuser is only one of many forest landowners in Oregon who rely on Keep Oregon Green to provide statewide wildfire prevention awareness and education. And Weyerhaeuser supports Keep Oregon Green through specific project grants as well as through our own local district acreage assessment. And while Weyerhaeuser does some public education on its own, we usually focus more on how our employees and company protect the environment as we sustain and manage our forests. We rely on Keep Oregon Green to get our message across. So it's imperative for people who use our property for recreational activities to know about wildfire problems and also the measures they can take to prevent wildfires while recreating not only on our lands, but also on private and other public lands. The new license plate that you see before you here may be just the key to unlock and increase awareness. And how can anyone driving behind a vehicle with this license plate not remember the slogan, "Only you can prevent wildfires"? And I know you might be thinking that here we go again with another license plate, and I know you might be thinking another Oregon plate will add only to the mix of the many plates that we have out there, too many plates, some say. But this is not just any other plate. And it's basically the standard Oregon plate, as you can see, with a standard Oregon color scheme and a standard Oregon design with the tree in the center. The only difference is the small smoky bear image, on the side of the plate. I ask that you fully support House Bill 2036 and give Keep Oregon Green and Oregon a greater tool to help reduce the number of unwanted human-caused wildfires. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will we be hearing from the DMV as to the costs? We had a bill last week to screen some information on license plates, and that was going to be minimal charge. This appears to be a screening job on this plate as well, but we're looking at a rather significant charge here. So I just want to reconcile at some point with the DMV.
Yes.
Thank you.
They will be here. Unless you would like to answer that, Mr. Moskovitz.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Good morning or good afternoon, and thank you very much for allowing us to come testify in support of this House bill. My name is Katie Lighthall, and I'm the director of Project Wildfire in Deschutes County. We are a county-ordained group with one mission, and that is to prevent losses, injuries, deaths, and environmental losses, everything that can come from catastrophes, from wildfire. And as part of our goal, we try to educate the many folks in Deschutes County and surrounding counties about how to basically how to change behaviors and attitudes towards wildfire and how each individual has a part in that. And one of our strongest partners in that education effort is the Forest Service and Smokey Bear, who attends each of our events and all of our activities and is an integral part of what we do in Deschutes County. So I'm here just to lend our support on behalf of Project Wildfire and just let you know that we think this is a great idea, and if you have questions, you can let me know.
Thank you. See any? So go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Gary Marshall. I'm the Deputy Fire Chief and Fire Marshal for the City of Bend. I'm here to support House Bill 2036. Real brief overview. Wildfires are an ever-growing concern throughout the western United States. In 1996 alone, Oregon lost 44 homes to wildfire. A lot of the wildlife was killed, tens of thousands of acres lost, and a lot of our natural resources went up in smoke. We can replace the homes almost overnight, but it will take decades to replace the trees and replace a healthy forest. Many of these fires are human caused, which are preventable. The rest of the fires are often dubbed as natural, such as lightning caused. We can't prevent lightning, but we can mitigate the amount of damage caused by natural fires. Providing comprehensive fire prevention programs through quality public education is the most effective way to change personal behaviors to reduce the amount of human caused fires or mitigating wildfire spread. Keep Oregon Green Association has been a leader in fire prevention awareness and education programs for nearly seven decades. This organization was preaching fire safety to citizens and visitors within this fine state during World War II to reduce the impact to the minimal firefighting resources available at that time. 60 years later, these wildland fires are bigger and more expensive to fight than ever before. Fire suppression forces need our help, and fire prevention is the answer. Keep Oregon Green Association is a nonprofit organization. This organization is funded through donations, pledges, and contracts with private and public fire protection agencies. I can personally attest, with shrinking budgets in the fire service and with the Bend area leading the growth in Oregon, the numbers of fires each year to continue to rise. With your committee's endorsement, Keep Oregon Green can be one step closer to adequately funding their fire prevention programs without the use of tax revenue. Smokey Bear is the symbol of wildfire prevention within the United States. Whether it is the young or the old, when a citizen sees Smokey Bear, they think wildfire prevention. What better way to memorialize this icon by adding it to the Oregon State License Plate, a state known throughout the world as the Timber State? What better way to allow our citizens to voluntarily purchase a license plate to help fund wildfire prevention, knowing they made a difference? Keep Oregon Green has been a servant to citizens in Oregon for generations. This funding mechanism will reward your constituents by allowing more fire prevention programs to change human behaviors towards unwanted fires, and with the goal to keep fires small and manageable for fire suppression forces. With your help, we will have a greater chance to save more parks, our forests, wildlife, and natural resources for generations to come from the devastation of wildfire. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today on this important matter to fire prevention personnel. And if you have any questions, be happy to answer those.
I don't see any.
Thank you.
If y'all excuse me, I'm going to close the public hearing on this, but I will get back to it in a few minutes, and I'm going to open a close public hearing on House Bill 2036, and we will come right back to it. And I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3082.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 3082 removes the requirement that an ordinance establishing county registration fees for vehicles be approved by the electors of that county. We're still waiting on both the fiscal and revenue statement on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would Representative Hunt like to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. I do miss serving on this committee with all of you, although hearing about Smokey Bear plates reminded me of some of the things I don't miss about serving on this committee. Too much discussion about license plates. I'm actually surprised to see discussion about license plates under your chairship, Madam Chair. But
me too.
I appreciate your hearing this bill today. This is probably one of the most simple-looking bills we will see as a legislator. You'll notice there's actually no bold on this bill. The key point is in lines 9, 10, and 11, where it deletes one sentence from statute. It deletes the sentence that requires that registration fees enacted by the governing body of a county must be submitted to the electors of the county for their approval. One change. And I think this has obviously been in statute for quite a while. It has obviously been a barrier for local governments to be able to impose a county vehicle registration fee. I think especially a couple things have really changed. Obviously, the need for transportation investment right now is huge. It's huge at the county level. It's huge at the state level. I think it's safe to say there is no way, whatever we do this session, that we're going to address, we're going to meet that need. And I think it's fair to say that we're going to fall far short of addressing that need in terms of anything we enact inside this building. The second factor is obviously the whole county timber funding issue, which has come into play, which has added an additional hammer against certain counties in addition to just the general disinvestment that we've made over time. This bill does not solve all those problems. This bill really gives one more tool in the toolbox for those counties to be able, if they choose, it's totally permissive to a board of county commissioners to be able to enact a local vehicle registration fee in their county. If they did it, all those monies would stay in the county, and we would not instruct them to do it. We would not instruct them not to do it. It would basically give them one more tool that they can respond both to the huge issues they're dealing with on the maintenance and preservation side, as well as modernization, as well as the additional burden that so many of our counties are dealing with as a result of the uncertain future of county timber payments. So I urge this bill for your consideration. Would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hunt, do we know of any counties that have actually submitted under this particular legislation these fees for citizens' approval and a vote?
That is an excellent question, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Butler. The folks from AOC would be much better able to answer that. I believe there have been some. There have certainly been some local governments who put out other transportation funding measures for vote. I am not sure specifically in answer to your question, but I'm sure folks from AOC would be able to answer that. I will say I do believe that there are counties who, if we pass this, there are counties around the state who will utilize this change.
Follow-up, if I
may.
Thank you. Representative Hunt, in the Revenue Committee, we've got a bill similar to this where we're actually asking for an opportunity to increase the amount of the fee that voters could vote upon or using this deletion on lines 9 through 13 or 9 through 11, which they could impose by fiat just by vote of the county commission. We've had testimony in this committee about imposition of fees, and the testimony which we received indicates that these county commissions are somewhat hesitant to even bring it forward for a vote. This way, we don't even have to bring it to a vote. They just go ahead and impose the tax without a vote, according to the way that you're proposing it?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that they would have the ability, if House Bill 3082 passes, to enact a county vehicle registration fee. Obviously, that would be subject to the same provisions of anything else they enact at the county level. And it's really a fairly unique kind of situation where we, you know, right now a county can set the filing fees for their documents, they can set their dog license fees, they can set a whole variety of other fees. There is just this one particular area in state statute where we say, except this. You can set all these other fees for county purposes, except this one, where this one has to go out for a vote of the people. It just seems very inconsistent to me to other allowances. These are all obviously elected officials accountable to us at the county level.
And Madam Chair, I just say for the committee record that I think that the two Eastern Oregon County judges testified that if they put this out to a vote of the people under the current law, that they thought that would be one of the last opportunities that they would have to take any public action because they feared recall even discussing those kinds of things. But I do agree with Representative Hunt that this is another opportunity for those folks. And as I say, we are discussing this very issue down in the Revenue Committee and wondered if this has a subsequent referral to Revenue?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative, no. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3082, and we will come back to you. And finish the public hearing on House Bill 2036. And I open the public hearing on 2036. And I have Paul Chapman and Charlie Stone.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and committee members. My name is Paul Chapman. I am an area manager and forester for the Campbell Group, which is a timberland investment and management organization. I manage timberlands for institutional investors, such as public employee retirement funds and university endowments. I'm also the vice chair of Keep Oregon Green, and also am a small farmer owning and raising a family on a vineyard near Cheshire, Oregon. Today, I'd like to take this opportunity to speak to you on HB 2036, Smokey Bear license plates, and some reasons as to why they are important to Oregonians and me. Though the sale of these plates will provide much-needed additional funding to KOG for improvement and expansion of wildfire prevention programs, I'd like to convey to you the public service announcement and public benefits that the plates themselves will have on wildfire prevention and state expenditures. The population of the state of Oregon is growing. Oregon's population grew 6.4% compared to the nationwide average of 5.3% from 2000 through 2005, of which 56% of the increase from 2000 to 2003 was from migration or people entering Oregon from other states and countries. In 2005, 8.5% of Oregon's population spoke a language other than English at home. These new additions to Oregon may be unfamiliar with the measures necessary to prevent wildfires on our forest and rangelands. Smokey Bear plates will help educate newcomers of the importance for Oregonians to prevent wildfires by using a symbol that crosses language barriers and age groups. It's a universal, almost a universal symbol that is easily transferred from one language to the other. Children too young to read or who do not speak English are familiar with Smokey Bear and his message of wildfire prevention. Smokey the Bear and his wildfire prevention message can also be conveyed to tourists and visitors to Oregon forests. There are 69 million visits to Oregon public forests and parks every year. Each one is a potential wildfire start due to carelessness. Conveying Smokey's message is crucial in minimizing the impacts these visitors have to our forests. These plates will also be useful to those of us who are native or long-term residents of Oregon. Even those of us who work in the forest can use reminders to be careful with the activities that we conduct. Those of us in private industry, we have regular monthly safety meetings that remind us to be safe. Seeing Smokey Bear on a plate does the same thing to our workers that work in the woods constantly. It reminds them to be safe in what they're doing in things that can cause wildfires. Finally, the cost savings to Oregonians for wildfires in an ever start is significant. These are tax dollars that can be spent on other programs other than fighting wildfires. After having a forest fire on the forest that I managed in 2003, I'm a firm believer in that the cheapest wildfire to put out is the one that never starts. A relatively small 500-acre fire can cost almost $1 million to extinguish, and that does not take into account the resource losses and damages that occur. These license plates, while providing a constant reminder to all Oregonians and visitors, will cost the public very little while having the potential to save millions of dollars. As population increases, the potential for more wildfires increase. Through education and constant reminders, which includes the use of Smokey Bear license plates, we can all minimize the number of human-caused wildfires in Oregon, saving precious state and private dollars, minimizing smoke and its related health impacts, and minimizing the aesthetic, wildlife, and other natural resource losses that can be associated with wildfires. I hope you will join me in supporting the passage of HB 2036. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Seeing none, go ahead.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Charlie Stone. I'm a policy analyst for the Department of Forestry Protection from Fire Program. The several folks that have gone before me have done a wonderful job, in my opinion, of eliciting all the reasons to support House Bill 2036. I just want to make two additional comments to add to that and agree with everything that's been said so far. First of all, when this bill was first presented in the last session, I surveyed members of the employees of the Department of Forestry to try and see, is this actually going to sell and do better than some of the plates that have been issued and then gone away after a year or so. Out of just 600 permanent employees of the Department of Forestry, in a couple weeks' time through email, I found that there were at least 210 sets of plates that would be purchased in the first 2 years from those folks. If you take the 6,000 or more Forest Service employees around the state of Oregon, the BLM, the rural fire districts, the timber industry folks, and concerned citizens, I have no doubt in my mind that we'll be able to sell and continue to sell Smokey Bear plates to keep them a viable mechanism. The other point I wanted to make was that the bill actually has a responsibility for the Department of Forestry in there to deal with the federal government and make sure that we have the authority to use the Smokey Bear image. I'm here to assure you that we're all ready to carry out that responsibility. It's all wired and ready to go if this bill passes, and we very much support the concept of Smokey Bear on our state license plates. So, again, I'd be willing to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Jack Evans.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Jack Evans with the Department of Transportation, and here to talk to House Bill 2036, the Smokey Bear Plate Bill. This bill will give DMV the authority to issue a group plate, and in particular another group plate that carries with it an image or a logo or a decal on it. Right now those are restricted to the Purple Heart and to institutions of higher education. We'll need this bill to allow us to produce plates with the image of Smokey Bear on them. The Department of the Forestry Department and the Keep Oregon Green Association, as you've heard, will be acquiring permission from the federal government to use this logo, which we'll use on the plate. There'll be a surcharge for the plate. Individuals that purchase it will pay $32 across a two-year registration period. And every time the plate, as well as every time the plate is renewed at registration. And these funds, minus a small amount for DMV's costs, will be given to the Keep Oregon Green Association. All fees to implement this bill will be paid by the Keep Oregon Green Association, and there's a $10,000 application fee that is in statute that the Keep Oregon Green Association will have returned to them when they sell 1,000 plates in the first year, the first 12 months. So we'll be putting this together as soon as the bill passes. There was a question regarding the bill that we heard a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, which is the Medal of Honor plate. And what's the difference? Why did that cost virtually nothing? That plate originally, and I'll go ahead and say that the primary costs are the programming costs. About $11,000 of these costs are associated with programming DMV's computer. And this is the same discussion we had last time about that particular estimate. But that's what it costs to program any number of plates into the system. With the Medal of Honor plate, we had also attached $11,000 plus the additional fees to that. And since this was one individual and not a nonprofit group, we had asked that the funds be appropriated from the general fund. And as you recall, the speaker came up with a different plan and asked us to make this a vanity plate, which worked for that one particular plate, and hence there were no costs associated with it. The cost of the design itself of any kind of a licensed plate is insignificant. The true costs are is the programming, the computer, to make this registration plate work. So I'll answer any other questions that you might have.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
So my question is, could this be a vanity plate similar to the other vanity plates, or is that impossible?
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, that is impossible. For this particular plate, it's a group plate which is designed to generate revenue for the Keep Oregon Green Association, as opposed to a custom plate, which is just meant to be an expression of individuality on your plate. That particular program worked for the Medal of Honor program because we have one recipient, and we could anticipate maybe three or four over the course of that license plate, so we could save a small number, protect a small number of the custom plate configurations. With something like Smokey Bear that may be selling thousands of plates, that wouldn't be possible.
Just one brief follow-up, Jack. Thank you very much for that explanation and your previous communication back in February regarding the 4-H and FFA organizations who wanted to do a similar kind of a thing, figured that while you were reprogramming for Smokey Bear, that perhaps FFA and 4-H could tag along on that same reprogramming. Does the programmer say they're finished up with Smokey Bear, dust his hands off, and say, now let me go back in and start all over again and start from scratch for the next plate? Is it $11,000 each time your programmer does that?
Chair by Representative Butler, that's an estimate. That $11,000 is based upon the experience DMV has had in the past in programming these types of plates. However, at the end of the session, DMV will look at all the bills that impact particular areas in terms of programming and in terms of staff impact, and they'll create an implementation plan. And it's conceivable that there could be efficiencies in certain areas. In the area of programming the computer, I'm hesitant to make any promises about that because that's a pretty dicey area right now with that particular system and all the other programming that's going on, but that is a possibility.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, my concern is then that while we've got the computer programmer putting in, this is the head of a bear, and it says keep Oregon green, and with a hat that says Smokey on it, I'm wondering if we couldn't have the programmer say, and also there might be a plate out there that says FFA and 4-H in Oregon, which passes on a very excellent message in the farm community as well. So I just leave that open to the committee as a discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to meet you.
Does the DMV anticipate a loss in revenue to those other organizations out there that have specialty plates as well?
Chair Byer, Representative Smith, we really have no way to know that. That you're correct in the underlying assumption that the plates do compete against one another, but the bulk of license plate holders have the tree plate, so we have no way to know who would swap out their Crater Lake plate for Smokey Bear or who might just take their existing tree plate and get a Smokey Bear plate in place of it.
How many specialty plates does the state of Oregon have?
Chair Byer, Representing Smith, there are three specialty plates, which are the Crater Lake, the Salmon, and the Cultural Plate. And then this particular type of plate, Smokey Bear, falls into a different category, which is the Group Plate. There's about 31 different varieties of Group Plates.
Very unfair of me to ask, what are those 31? Would it be possible, in alphabetical order, please, would it be possible for you to get a list of those? I'm just curious, the state of Oregon has.
Happen to have with me.
Oh, he's good.
Which I'll pass out a diagram that that I put together that helps me understand this confusing world of license plates. And it'll show you the various plates that are in existence, special kinds of plates that are in existence. And you'll see on the yellow are the specialty plates that I spoke of, the Salmon, Crater Lake, and Cultural. And then the large middle group are about 31 plates that represent all the group plates. And they fall into three categories, and those are veterans groups, institutions of higher learning, the universities, and then nonprofit groups, which Smokey Bear would fall into. And you can see the dark blue are the active plates. Those are plates that sell that statutorily defined 500 plates each year, being renewed or sold new. So those remain active, and those are the Vietnam vets, the veterans recognition, the Oregon professional fighters, U of O, OSU, and support our troops, which is a new plate. Then you have the middle category, which are plates that didn't hit that 500 level, and they're not being ordered anymore, but there are still maybe some in stock. We still have an inventory of them. So you could go in, for example, and get Willamette University. Even though it's not an active plate, there's some of them left, so you could get it. The final category, which has things like the Pearl Harbor Survivors and Merchant Marine and Linfield College, those we are no longer ordering, and we no longer have a supply of them. But if you've got them, you can put them on your new car and transfer them. So these are the group plates, which are the there's 31 of them, and so far, if you add up all those groups, they've sold about 27,000 license plates. And last year in 2006, all the groups together sold about 2,600.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Jack, you stated this, and I apologize, I did not catch the answer, I missed it. Why is Smokey Bear license plate not a specialty plate again?
Chair Byer, Representative Smith, a specialty plate is the plate with a unique background. There are three of them,
got it,
the culture
got it,
plate.
Got
yeah.
It. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Jack, it's my understanding that if FFA wanted to come in and get a plate but only wanted FFA on it without an emblem, they would not need legislation to do that.
Chair Beyer, that's correct. They would, the program exists right now, and as a matter of fact, Support Our Troops was a recent addition to this list of groups, and they just have words in the 3x3-inch area that says Support Our Troops. And you'll note on here the little red dots are those plates that have logos or decals on them, and those are limited in at this time to just the universities and to the Purple Hearts. So if you want to add a picture, you need to have the legislation to do it. Hence, the Smokey Bear needs to have this legislation. If it wasn't for Smokey's image, if it just said "Keep Oregon Green," then we wouldn't need the legislation. They could just go forward.
Thank you.
And the fee on that, Madam Chair?
I will go ahead and let him answer.
Chair, by Representative Butler, the fee would be the same, with or without the decal.
It would be $32 per plate. Is that what the...
Oh, I see what you mean. Representative Butler, the surcharge that would be earned, if you will, by the Keep Oregon Green Association would be the same amount. It's not reliant on having a logo on the plate.
Thank you. And I just want to, just a history piece, is what you're seeing here all came about because of a proliferation of license plates and an effort to clean them up in the 2003 session, which became the requirement for a plate to sell 500 to remain active, those kind of things at that point in time. So, and that's why we're a little more protective of giving out license plates. So, any other questions here? Seeing none, thank you. And that's all I had signed up. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2036. And I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2036. And someone has a motion.
Carolyn.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2036 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei has moved House Bill 2036 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Butler?
Madam Chair, I recognize that the amount of the total fiscal is less than the $50,000. Therefore, this does not need to go to the Ways and Means process, but that there could be generated actual revenue and expense overall relating to the plates, and I think that the testimony which has been offered today, these folks recognize that there's some application program expenses that are up front that they're preparing to go ahead and assist with.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Butler. I'll just make my comments, and I want to thank everybody, and I am still a no vote on this. Not that this wouldn't be one I'd support. I just don't, in general, support license plates. My father was a firefighter, so it's, you know, a subject that's near and dear to me. But I am going to continue to be a no vote on this bill. All right. Those of the opinion, House Bill 2036. Should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
Yes.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Beyer?
No. House Bill, the motion having carried, I declare passed. And do I have a volunteer for this? Unless you'd like me to carry it.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Representative Buckley will carry the bill. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2036 and thank everybody for coming. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2851. And Judith, remind us.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. House Bill 2851 is the measure that creates a task force on transportation needs of persons with developmental disabilities. It would declare an emergency effective upon passage. You do have at your seat the Dash 1 amendments. Those amendments modify the membership of the task force such that the Senate President and the Speaker shall each appoint one public member rather than a member of each body. One member would be appointed by the Director of Human Services, one member by the Director of Transportation. We would have one member from the Seniors and People with Disabilities Division of DHS representing Developmental Disability Services. Two members with developmental disabilities selected by the Self-Advocates as Leaders Organization. Two members representing county disability programs appointed by the Association of Counties. One member appointed by the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. One member appointed by the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. One member appointed by the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition. And then a final member appointed by the Oregon Transit Association. The Dash 1 amendments would further add to the task force duties the identification and review of transportation needs and opportunities in the context of community living needs of persons with disabilities and in the context of integration with public transportation, public transit services. It would extend the time of a report to the appropriate legislative committee. It was in the original bill, January 1st, 2008, that is now moved to October 30th of 2008. Those findings and recommendations would be need to be reported to the appropriate legislative committee. And finally, it would direct that the Department of Human Services, as well as the Department of Transportation, provide staff as well as information necessary for the task force to perform its functions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for coming back to this issue. I had a couple of questions. Certainly, the amendments which are proper today and the form of the Dash 1 amendments dated 4607 address some of the concerns. I did have a comment relative to geographical representation. I'm hopeful that particularly with regard to those public members presented by and appointed by the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, that we could have some geographical representation to include those areas of rural Oregon, because in my other comments, which is now added to the bill in the form of on page 1A of the hand engrossed bill under the small b, the very last 31A, B, and C, and D, the task force undertaking. My concern was there to optimize the availability of transportation funding and using nonprofits and insurance companies and those kinds of things. I think that the language is adequate so that the task force would actually be addressing those kinds of issues. But then I had a kind of a final question, irrespective of any ways and means costs, kind of a final question after Representative Geltzer testified. I never could come up with the fact of why we would need a committee for something that they're already doing in large part, other than to get us a report as to maybe identifying new resources and so forth, which I guess they could in this whole bill. But it seemed to me that these folks were very well organized. When they came forward, they had Council of Governments, the DD Coalition, Employment Division, other folks with challenges and disabilities came forward and gave excellent testimony on it. I guess I still wondered why we needed to have the cost of appointing a commission, and then, as I say, I was concerned about the rural issues as well. So those were the comments that I had in my records and notes, some of which have been addressed, others still remain, and again, my hope would be that some of the folks that would be represented could certainly bring forward the rural issues, because our rural transportation, DD transportation issues, are entirely different than the balance of the state of Oregon, and one size fits one, and that's all there is to it.
Thank you, Representative Butler. I tend to agree with you that that's probably a very important piece. I do have a couple people here. Representative Gelzer was not able to be here. She was had a prior commitment. But I have her staff person, Cyril, and then I have Tim Krall. And I don't know if either of those have anything that they can add to the concerns that have been raised. Go ahead.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Tim Krall, and I'm director of the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. Our members are nonprofits who serve people with disabilities across the state, primarily developmental disabilities. And I just wanted to reassure Representative Butler that you're absolutely right. The rural demands are completely different than those with urban transportation systems. And one of the things we wanted to make sure from our perspective and those of others that was made very clear in response to your question about why do it. We have felt for many years that this was an issue that was always on the back burner, never got addressed. We could never get enough attention to it within Department of Human Services. And so it's really kind of an expression of frustration, I guess. I think if things worked the way they probably should, we wouldn't need a commission, but we have felt over the years this issue never got addressed and never got the perspective of outside of DHS. So that was our intent. And we hope that we, by the amendments, got rid of most of the fiscal. I'm not totally clear what the fiscal hit is anymore, but we were trying to get rid of it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I guess I want to ask a question regarding the fiscal. I have concerns about that, too. I'm assuming that it would be Department of Human Services staff that would staff this.
Well, in the summary, and so I assume it's in the bill, talks about the Department of Human Services and the Department of Transportation having shared staffing on this.
So, but there probably will be a fiscal then, right?
Yes. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I recognize that, and what we've done is we've added one additional item to the overall mission of the task force in this process. Not exactly what I anticipated it might look like, of the number of things that they would be doing, but I honestly don't have any idea how much the fiscal could be if you had between now and the next scheduled biennial legislative session, 10 meetings plus the staffing for those 10 meetings, just depend upon how much they got into it. But I think we've all here today, with the perhaps the exception of Representative Reed, have been involved in those interim committees. A lot of staff work is involved to get ready for them, to draw people in and so forth. If you had one staff person assigned temporarily from DHS, one from transportation, and then the folks that are involved, the state folks, local folks, appointees, certainly the appointees have a from the legislature, the Senate, and the House, have a fiscal cost associated with their comings and goings and the per diems that are involved. whether the total cost of that, depending upon the number of meetings, would have a $50,000 or more cost, I really don't know. I'm not comfortable knowing what other costs or what other task force we've had. I mean, a task force on horseshoe nails, it costs us about $35,000, and that's something that is of concern to me. That is there any way we could get a fiscal estimation before we move forward on this?
Yes, that was a comment I was just going to make, was if the committee would prefer, we'll be very happy to not work this today, but follow up on a fiscal and bring it back. And
Madam Chair, the issues are very, very broad, and they affect all of Oregon. And to address it, along the lines of what's available today versus what's needed. And it's not just what's available today. It talks about what the future of DD transportation may look like in the state of Oregon. And we've had, I think there's been some excellent ideas presented over the years, Madam Chair, with regard to call a ride and some of those kinds of things, and the technology certainly is changing, so that I think that they could do a great job. But to really do a job that's going to benefit us, I would think that they're going to be more involved than just a few meetings and making some suggestions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead and close the work session. Thank everybody for coming, and we'll follow up with Representative Gelzer's office on a fiscal on this one. And I close the work session on House Bill 2851. Okay, we'll go our second round of license plates. And so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3161. And I'm going to call Jack Evans forward.
Madam Chair, do we know what kind of, maybe Judy could tell us what kind of a rally we're missing out there?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I don't know what fun we're missing out there. I don't know what group is, but the window is closed, unfortunately. We are.
I'm sitting next to Representative Reed, and he's really getting excited about going out and marching for something, and I didn't know what it was.
It has to do with license plates, I'm sure.
Anxious.
House Bill 3161 is, as the Chair indicated, another one of the license plate bills before the committee today. It would direct the Department of Transportation to establish a program to issue veterans recognition registration plates to veterans or veterans groups. We have received a no revenue impact, still waiting on the fiscal on this one as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Evans, would you like me to call the other two people up with you, or do you want to start?
Madam Chair, yeah, that would be a good idea.
Okay. Jim Willis, and then Mac McDonald, if you'd come up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jack Evans with the Department of Transportation to speak to House Bill 3161. And this is a bill that DMV has been working with the Veterans Administration on during the interim. And it's a unique kind of a situation, again, in that it doesn't create any new license plate programs. It subsumes the existing veterans groups under a single plate that already exists, which is the Veterans Recognition Plate. And it creates a new design that Mr. Willis will describe to you. And the reason that this is useful to DMV is that it solves some problems. And namely, if you'll recall, I showed you this chart of all the group plates, and you see that there's only six active group plates at this time, and among those this, the Vietnam vets and the veterans are the two veterans groups that are active. All the other ones are unable to make the 500 plate per year target, which is in statute. This attaches that 500 plates per year to the I'm being a little bit distracted, sorry about that. It attaches it to the veterans plate as a whole. So if the veterans plate makes the 500, which will be no problem given their records, then the other small groups can reactivate if they so desire. So I'm going to let Jim talk about the new design. We'll be working with veterans on that, with the Veterans Administration on that. The individual groups will be able to choose the words or decal as they to reflect the new type of plate. There are no programming costs associated with this since the plates are already in existence. Hence, the cost to Veterans Administration is pretty low. And the groups that are in this program will maintain their eligibility requirements. For example, each of the veterans groups have their own eligibility requirements. Vietnam Veterans is an organization that you don't have to be a veteran to obtain that license plate, and I believe all the others you do. Those existing eligibility requirements will be honored, and the groups that are currently receiving funds for the $10 surcharge will continue to receive those funds individually. If they choose not to, it'll go to the Oregon Veterans Home. So with that, I think I'll answer questions or turn it over to Jim Willis to describe the plate in a little more detail.
I have one. I don't know if anybody else does. And that does this bill need amendments, and are there any amendments out there?
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. I think the amendments are before you now. Phrase that as a question. I think that you...
we don't have amendments, I don't think. So the bill is just okay as written? No amendments?
I think it does need some amendments.
There's a couple of amendments that we've got in the hopper then, and those basically do a couple of cleanup things that just say that this is going to be limited to passenger plates as they currently are now, and without that, we would have gotten into more programming costs, and we wanted to avoid that. And then the second thing I think involved the way we phrased it, that the Veterans Administration would be doing the design in consultation with DMV and the police. And I had anticipated that we would have those by today, but evidently we didn't. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Beyer and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And, Chair, I'm especially happy to tell you that what this does is actually brings a larger number of plates down to one.
That's why I love this.
I've only been in this committee for just an hour, a couple hours, I guess, and I see the flavor. So I'm really happy to be here. I'm going to set this up here, and hopefully it'll sit like it's supposed to. This is a very rough draft of what the new Oregon Veterans Recognition Plate would look like. And this is a one-size-fits-all. And I purposely brought our previous brochure around so everybody could see what's out there right now. And this doesn't even include all of them. This just shows you some of them. And, of course, if we are successful in passing this legislation, we will print up a brand-new document to educate our veteran population as to what the new Oregon Veterans Recognition Plate is all about. What happened here was that the Oregon veterans and their families have told us, we can't tell by the current set of plates who's a veteran and who isn't. It's just too generic, and it's all over the board. So by coming up with the plate that I have here, and I hope that you can see, the one thing that just jumps right off the plate at you is it's veteran. And it's very, very clean. It's very plain, and it's designed to be that way. And what my colleague Jack was telling you about a moment ago about the groups that are already in, if you're a Korean War veteran and you have that plate today, that language, Korean War veteran, will go right over here on this side of the plate, just as it does in the brochure, only it'll be on the Oregon Veterans Recognition Plate. That's one really good advantage. So we get all the groups in, and whoever they are can be identified right here on the same plate. Now, here's what's really neat, and with your permission, Madam Chair, if I could stand up, I'd like to show you something.
If you were in the Marine Corps and you would prefer that your veteran plate reflected that, then you can put the branch of service on this plate, just like that. And that's the great seal of the United States Marine Corps. Now, if, like myself, you didn't serve in the Marine Corps, then you'd be able to put the United States Air Force on yours. And on it goes, Coast Guard and Army and Navy. Now, the other advantage we have with this plate is if you earned a Valor Award, as one of the people in this room did, the third highest medal for bravery in the service, which is the Silver Star, you can have that on your plate. Any of these applications for the set of plates is $1. Cost effective, very good program. And if I may, Madam Chair, I'd just like to introduce to you the Vietnam War recipient of the Silver Star who's with us, retired Marine Captain Jeff Bodenweiser. Jeff? For you history buffs in the room, he led the only bayonet charge of the entire Vietnam War. And he's here to tell about it, so that's a good thing. Now, if you wanted just the campaign medal of the conflict that you served in, this is the Vietnam campaign ribbon right here. So a person could just choose that. And if you just to show that we're staying up with things, if you just got home from Iraq, don't worry. There's the Iraq service medal right there. We also have Afghanistan, and we have the Global War on Terror, and so on. Love to take credit for this idea, but I actually got it from the Director of Veterans Affairs in Maine, where they first came up with this great plate, or one similar to this one, and it's been very, very well received by their community. We also worked with Florida, we worked with Utah, we worked with California, and we worked with Alaska. So, in any event, there are a few specialty ones. This one is, as an example, is the former prisoners of war. And we put the POWMIA seal on there because it's very recognizable. Maybe not as much as the bear we were hearing about a moment ago, but certainly people know what this means. And the former prisoners of war are very appreciative of that effort. And in closing, I'd simply like to say, Madam Chair, how much I appreciate the help of the Department of Motor Vehicles, Oregon Department of Transportation. And we worked all through the interim on this, and I think we have a very cost-effective solution to bringing all these plates into one plate. And I know the veterans of Oregon will be very appreciative of your favorable action on this. I'd be happy to answer any questions of the committee.
Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim or Jack, this is a specialty plate. This is not a specialty plate.
No.
It uses one of Oregon's current plates, the Salmon, Crater Lake, Cultural, or just the Oregon, the tree and the mountains.
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, this would be a group plate, and it'd be a new category of group plate in that it does have a special background. So this will be a new animal. But it'll be under the program of group plates. It won't be and it will have the eligibility in most cases will be limited to veterans. It won't have the broad applicability of one of the three specialty plates, the Crater Lake or the Cultural or the Salmon plate.
Follow up, if I may.
Follow up.
So this uses, using the brochure we've got right here, this uses the tree in the mountains plate. Does not.
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, those are the existing plates that would be brought under this concept, but the background of this plate will be a unique background, and that'll be designed by the Veterans Administration through a program that they're putting together, and then it will be in consultation with DMV and with the police. And the reason that is that allows then the placement to have a unique veterans plate and at the same time allow the placement of the different service medals and service insignia.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason I ask that is that that the word veteran will not fit on the current, between the two little mountains on the bottom and the Christmas tree that we've got on the current plates. I don't know how it will fit on the salmon, and it wouldn't fit on the cultural trust plate, nor on, and I don't know about the Crater Lake. But so this is a brand new plate, so there's going to have a pretty healthy fiscal on this?
Chair by Representative Butler, actually no. Since, you know, as we discussed earlier, the thing that contributes to the healthy fiscals, if you will, are the programming costs, and there are none associated with this since there are no new plate programs. There's just existing programs. All we're dealing with are the implementation costs and the review by the Attorney General and those things that the Veterans Administration will be picking up, and I believe those are in the neighborhood of around $9,500.
Got it. Yes, Chair Beyer and Representative Butler, that's correct. As best we can tell, our fiscal on this is about $9,000 to $9,500 for the entire program.
I just don't know how. I just don't know how. I mean, silk screening is anywhere from $11,000 to $15,000. We got a whole new plate here, and it's $9,000, $9,500. I guess I really don't understand any of the fiscal issues with regard. I thought I did a few minutes ago, and I don't.
Well, it's taken me what, 2-3 sessions to get there. But I think the major cost on the other plates was programming in the Smoky Bear plate, whereas these are all existing plates and don't have to be programmed in at this point. It's just the background isn't the cost of this. It's the actual programming of a certain group of plates into the system.
So
I don't know that that helps you or not.
So the plates exist now? The plates already have been already issued. Yeah, and I guess we've got veterans, Vietnam vets, organ paralyzed vets that still have active or no new orders that would go away. We've got an inventory of those plates, but I'm still wondering about the numbering system to get them into the overall computerized system. And I guess I'll just meet privately with Jack Evans, because this a brand new, never been designed for a plate. I mean, a few years ago we came forward with a Mustang plate, and the cost was $300,000 or something like that to get that designed and going, like the cultural trust. I mean, it was a very expensive plate, and we just couldn't go there. And I'm personally glad we didn't. I'm just anxious to know and understand why a brand new plate, never before designed, never before come forward, maximum that you're looking at is $9,500, but to put Smoky Bear on there, on an existing plate, is it appears to be $13,000-$15,000 and maybe more if you don't sell any. So, thank you.
Chair by Representative Butler, and I'd be happy to meet with you and talk to you in more detail about this, because it is, the world of license plates can be very confusing. Just again, the major cost, as the chair accurately portrayed, is the programming. Mm-hmm. These plates, as you suggest, already exist. There's 11 of them, I think. They'll be brought under one of them, and so the programming is there. The cost to actually come up with the design, the colored design or whatever it is, and do that on the plate is really insignificant, and that was a surprise for me to learn that as well. And I learned that last time when we were talking about the Medal of Honor plate, which was the vanity plate that had the red, white, and blue background. And it was, to do that was virtually nothing for the manufacturer to come up with that design. And then the individual decorations and insignia are decals, and that stuff can be done pretty inexpensively. Yeah. They cost about $1 a piece.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And I know that the plates already exist in the system, and some of them were out of the plates. Pearl Harbor, we don't have any more of those. But I was just anxious to know why one costs much more than the other. So,
Representative Domain.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that Mr. Evans realizes that when you say you're willing to meet with this representative, he meets with people at 5 and 6 in the morning.
That's local time, not mountain time, however.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Matt McDonald. I represent the United Veterans of Oregon, which is every federal registered veterans group in the state and some that are not federally registered. Before the session began, we sat down, all of us in this group, and came up with bills, and we prioritized the bills. We had 10 priority bills for this legislative session. This is number 3 on the list of prioritized bills of what the veterans want. And we feel that this bill would enable veterans to be easily recognizable, have their own plate, whereas the plates we have today, it's pretty hard to recognize it. And being very honest, I got that ugly yellow disabled plate, and I can't wait to get rid of it. But this plate is what the veterans want. This is what they voted for it at their meeting, and as I said, it's number 3 on our list of things we'd like to have accomplished during this session.
Question, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd love to know what number 1 and 2 were.
Number 1 issue is to treat all veterans the same. You don't put one veterans group ahead of another. If you have a bill that only addresses one veterans group and leaves out others, say one addresses only the National Guard but should include the Marines and the Navy, that one with the National Guard, they should change to veterans. So we treat all veterans the same. And number 2 was the funding of $300,000 for maintenance of the veterans home.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, I don't see any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on this bill, and we will look for the amendments and get it back on the schedule as soon as we can. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3082, or reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3082. And call Commissioner Lynn Peterson, John Mante, and Pam Gilmore.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Pam Gilmore. I'm director of the Clackamas County Department of Transportation and Development. To my right is Commissioner Peterson, and to her right is County Administrator John Mante.
Welcome.
I just have a few words to comment on with respect to House Bill 3082. First of all, thank you for having it under consideration. Any legislation that enables counties to reduce the funding gap between needs and revenue flowing in is indeed welcome. Believe it or not, in Clackamas County, the gap has grown. It's now $45 million. That's an annual figure. That's divided between the need for capital, or a growing county, with the need to build new roads and widen roads. That's about a $27 million per year gap. And believe it or not, $18 million is needed additional for county road maintenance purposes. That totals about $45 million. Why are these sums so great? Well, largely because motor vehicle taxes, fees, etc., since 1993, with the exception of those that were imposed in the OTIA legislation in 2003 and 1, I believe, haven't kept pace with revenue. It's been since 1993 that the gas tax, which is the largest source of revenue for road purposes, the last measure went into effect in 1993. So we've fallen far behind the needs, and as a result of that, coupled with price inflation, decreasing purchasing power, we're seeing the gap grow annually. Let me give you just a few facts and figures for what this means to Clackamas County specifically. If Clackamas County were to implement the vehicle registration fee of $27 per year, which the law would allow, about $8.6 million annually would be raised. and about 40% of that, under the law, could be shared with the cities or some other arrangement worked out. So that would give Clackamas County a little over $5 million annually, and cities in Clackamas County about $3.5 million annually. That's really a significant sum for us, albeit way short of the gap. Let me close by simply saying that as a transportation professional, it is clear to me that we are deferring road maintenance needs that really ought to be done today, timely, so that they're affordable, and we're really having to use certain road treatments that really aren't optimal. We're having to do a lot of chip seals, slurry seals, those kinds of things that don't have the useful life of an asphaltic overlay or a Portland cement concrete pavement. So we think we're just getting to that point where we're really starting to gamble a little bit. We're gambling with our future. So the time to really start closing that gap, we feel, is now, and this certainly is a start in the right direction for that. So again, thank you for your consideration of any and all methods by which local funding for roads and street repairs can be accomplished.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, John Mante, County Administrator for Clackamas County. Representative Hunt covered most of my points earlier. In the essence of time, I'll pass until there's questions later.
Chair Beyer, thank you so much for having us. I think that there's a lot of need, and you've heard these needs, but I'm just quickly going to go down the list between...
For the record.
I'm sorry, County Commissioner Lynn Peterson. I did that last time, too. I apologize.
Okay.
There's an immediacy with the secure rural schools, and while we don't know if that'll be a one-year extension or a five-year reduction over time, it'll still be a need that we need to replace the funding. This proposal will allow us as the county at least to replace what we will lose. If we don't have that money, we'll be able to only basically fill potholes. So it really is, it's not just... it's not just we can't do everything we want to do, it's that we can't do everything we need to do to keep the system functioning if we don't have this ability. There's also obviously a large growth in Clackamas County with all of Damascus being brought in. That's about 18,000 acres that we need to figure out how to partner, because growth can't pay its own way, although it and we need to be a partner in that, the state, the federal, as well as the local. We need to be a partner in that. We also need to be able to be a partner with the state in terms of the state transportation system. And a lot of what you have been talking about is what is the state roles in transportation system funding as we move forward. And we might not solve that all in this session, but we're certainly going to strive to take a little bit of a chunk of that and say, listen, we can't partner with you unless we have the funds at the local level. And at this point, our only way to fund at the local level is through the gas tax. Especially in Clackamas County, like most of the counties, we weren't able to have levied a road district such as Washington County. This puts us at a bit of a disadvantage working with the state, working with the region, because we don't have the local funds to do the match. So we are looking to be a better partner, and this is one of the only tools we have to be a better partner. And I just want to get to the comment that Representative Butler made earlier on going to a vote versus enacting this. To me, as a state highway engineer back 15 years ago, as a transportation planner in the region for the last 15 years, transportation has not been regarded as a utility for a very long time. And as a utility, which is truly its function, no other utility is required to have the types of votes by voters that its sewer infrastructure does or water infrastructure does. And if we were really going to truly move into the next century and find ways to stabilize transportation funding, we're going to have to do that by looking at it as a utility and treat it as such. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think this will give us that ability to have that tool in the toolbox. And as Representative Hunt said, we know that we will still need to have all the stakeholders at the table as we move through the process, or it will be referred, because that is part of the things that's part of the process. And when we did this, when I was a city councilor in Lake Oswego, we were able to have the conversation and really work with our business community. We ended up, over time, doing a transportation utility maintenance fee. And we were able to ramp it up over 3 years so that the small businesses in Lake Oswego wouldn't be impacted right away. They'd be able to budget for it as they move through the process. So we were able to work with them, and that's the kind of thing I would envision happening in Clackamas County. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, just the concern that we have, I guess if you can get enough people to buy into the concept that you need to pay an additional, and I think we're working in revenue right now on an additional 50 some odd dollars per license plate in this process, each renewal that you have, that counties could charge. And I believe it was $54. Then if that could be mandated by the county commission, then I think we had some reticence by those Eastern Oregon folks that were here saying, you know, the people just wouldn't go for it. But that then gives rise to the fact that they better have the program well bought into by the public before they get ready to put these kinds of things, these taxes on the folks, or they were concerned that they would lose their jobs right away.
Thank you. Representative Tomei.
Madam Chair, my memory of when I'm meeting with the county commissioners, what I specifically had asked of them, because Milwaukee is considering a gas tax, and what I specifically asked of them was if they put on a gas tax, what would happen? And I think their response was that they would probably be recalled. But I think that's somewhat different from looking at roads as a utility. And
thank you. I think what's important is that we know that unless you do the proper homework, before you do something like this, you're doomed from the beginning. So if you're not willing to start those conversations and do that homework, this isn't going to be a good tool for you, but it would be out there if you were able to make the case. So
I'm just adding to that. Having worked with these folks in Clackamas County, I know that they're really good about process and that they have probably meetings after meetings after meetings and a lot of outreach and getting people from throughout the county to work on issues that are important. So, but I think we're talking about rural counties also. That's exactly what they would be needing to do, would get all the stakeholders buy in. If the roads are as bad as those people say it is, one would think that their community would support them. And I guess I have a lot of faith, at least in Clackamas County, that that would be the process.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Leslie Lewis.
See if you can sing louder than this one, Leslie.
You don't want to hear me sing at all, Representative Butler. good afternoon, Chair Beyer, committee members. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis, and I'm a county commissioner from Yamhill County, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3082 today. And I didn't have a chance to prepare written remarks. I just found out that this bill was going to be up and didn't have a chance to get you written remarks. But I wanted to go on record supporting this bill. As Representative Hunt said at the beginning, this could be a tool in the toolbox for counties. And I can say right at this point in time, I don't know for sure that my county would use this tool because of some of the issues that have been raised. But I think we'd like to have it as a tool in our toolbox. We are not as affected as some counties by the loss of federal forest funds, but we are losing over 10% of our road budget. We have been trying with our paved system to resurface 10% of our paved road system annually, and that's 38 miles. This coming fiscal year, we were going to cut that back to 12 miles, but then unfortunately we have two bridges that are fall in the 20-foot and under category, that there is no funds, state or federal funds, available for those bridges. So now we're having to cut back our resurfacing program back to 4 miles this coming year. So I think our county would be similar to other counties. We have significant maintenance issues on our bridges and our paved road system. We have about 14 major collectors that are major collectors in our system that are gravel, that are not paved. Currently, we have no way to pave those gravel collectors. We have been talking with our Road Improvement Advisory Committee, and we have some members on that committee that outside of the committee, because the committee's a county committee, so they can't discuss bond measures inside the committee, but some of those members are actively talking about, you know, potentially we need to do some kind of a bond measure. So, but we've also had members of the committee say, why does it always have to be property taxes? Why can't we look at other kinds of ways of raising revenue? So I believe that this would be a tool that potentially the county commissioners would like the opportunity to look at as a way of raising some revenues for our county roads. I would also like to say, as a county that has a major state highway project in our county that is currently unfunded, it's on the list of projects of statewide significance. It's called the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. We are being asked to provide local match, and this would also potentially be a source of funding for us to provide some local match for the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass project. So, Madam Chair, again, I think it would just be a tool that we could potentially use. I'm not saying that Yamhill County would do it, but it would be nice to have this tool in the toolbox. And with that, I would take any questions you have.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you very much for your testimony. First of all, you can already impose the gas tax automatically in your county.
No, that I believe that has to be a vote as well. Maybe Art Schlack would correct me. Yes, it has to be. It has to be a vote.
It has to be a vote. Okay.
Yes.
So with this presently having to be a vote, follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up, please.
Would you consider bringing this forward as a fiat and under by your own motion as a county commissioner, and under what circumstances relative to public hearings first?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I think we haven't really fleshed out what kind of a process that we would use, but I would look first to probably public hearings at the Road Improvement Advisory Committee, and then public hearings at the Board of Commissioners if we were to decide to move forward with something like this without putting it out to a vote. And again, Representative Butler, this is permissive, so I'm not saying that we would do this without putting it out to a vote. We might just go to that step. But I'm sure we would have public hearings at the Road Improvement Advisory Committee, public hearings at the Board of Commissioners level. And I think this would be after extensive work by our Road Improvement Advisory Committee to develop a list of projects that could potentially be funded by this, whether we would just plug it right into our resurfacing program that now has been so drastically cut back, or whether we would look at some of the safety projects, the very dangerous intersections that we can't now fund the fixing those, or whether we'd look at paving some of those major collectors I mentioned. I think the Road Improvement Advisory Committee, working with our public work staff, would want to weigh in on what would be the best use of those funds.
And finally, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Leslie, the other day, Bill Penhollow, formerly with AOC, and I guess on leave and retirement leave with them, and Morgan came to my office, and they have a list of all of the different kinds of things that counties have been able to do with regard to roads and roads construction, assessments districts, and those kinds of things. Have you seen that list had any opportunity to look at the list that AOC has?
Well, I've seen various tools that are available. I'm not sure I've seen the list specifically that you're talking about, but sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Butler. But our county has looked at local improvement districts, road districts. Many of these things are very cumbersome to set up, and in the case of and I'm not even sure statutorily local improvement district is the correct term anymore, but local improvement districts, you still need a source of funds so that you can loan out and then get paid back by the residents over a period of time. So you still have to have the cash up front to create an LID. I'm not sure statutorily since measure 5 and 50 whether we actually have LIDs anymore, but there is a mechanism similar to that in statute. We have talked at length at our county about those different ways of raising dollars, and some of them are very cumbersome, and as I said, most of them require you to have some source of upfront capital to do that.
Madam Chair, the reason I'm asking about this is because Bill Penhollow did identify that some of the old methods of raising funds for improving and then maintaining those improved roads by district was called a rural road assessment district. And rural road assessment districts only were just qualified for a certain amount of time and only then for only certain sizes of counties. Only Mount Hare County in Oregon has rural road assessment districts. And those farmers and ranchers assess on the basis of fair market value, real market value. And they love their rural road assessment districts. They have full control over them. They do participate in state highway funds, those that come to the county, and it's my understanding, even from visiting with Bill Penhollow, that they might be totally exempt away from Measure 5 because they're assessing themselves to build and maintain the highways. Now, my farmers and ranchers come to me and tell me, we love them. We don't want those to go away. No matter what you do, protect our rural road assessment districts. But I'm looking at the law, and they're saying those only qualified for a short period of time in small counties and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at now a county, Yamhill County, which has a great agricultural base, mm-hmm. a huge agricultural base, where you could have rural road assessment districts, but for the current limitation in the old law. And I'm looking at that and saying, that looks like to me that you could go out and say, if you really want your rural roads, you will share in this share of the gas tax money, this share of the licensure money, and those kinds of things, but you will then also assess yourselves and set those things up. So I think that there's still some work that could be done on rural road assessment districts, which I believe, and my visit with Morgan and Bill Penhollow, I think there's still a whole bunch of tools that we're just ignoring mm-hmm. that are outside of Measure 5, outside of Measure 50, which the county could administer and provide excellent roads by votes of the people that are in that area, and they can assess themselves for them.
We'll look into that. Thank you.
Thank you. Daryl Fuller.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller with the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. First, allow me to apologize for my hay fever. It's a bad time of the year to be allergic to pollen in Salem, Oregon. Nothing warmed my heart more this morning than knowing that I was coming to testify with concerns about a bill that was introduced by the Majority Leader. So let me first tell you what I agree with the Majority Leader on, and that is that transportation is a critical issue that needs additional funding, and that the statute that this bill would remove is at best an anomaly in terms of requiring local governments to get a vote of the people in order to increase a fee or to create a new fee. But I have a couple of concerns, one specific to auto dealers and then one a bit more philosophical, if you will. Auto dealers are one of the largest tax collectors for the state of Oregon. We collect a huge amount of title and registration fees, and we process that money and we hand it over to DMV, and that money goes to the Highway Trust Fund. And if you've had the opportunity to purchase a vehicle anytime in the recent past, you know that it's a rather long process to sign all the paperwork necessary to fill out the title and registration forms, to collect that money on behalf of our customers, and they're frustrated with the amount of paperwork there is in purchasing a vehicle. And most of that paperwork is the result of government regulations on what they have to sign and what we have to notice them about. So our concern is that if we have a system where some counties have registration fees and others don't, and the county-by-county registration fees are different, is that when we're selling a motor vehicle to somebody, it's going to get more complex in terms of finishing all that paperwork. And what do we do if somebody thinks they live in Multnomah County, but they actually live in Clackamas County, and we've collected the wrong amount of money from them, and we don't find out later? So we have some concerns, and it's a small concern because we'll get through it. It's not something that's going to end car sales, but it would create an additional level of frustration, I think, for people who are trying to purchase vehicles if we have a balkanized system of county-by-county registration. It has always been the preference of the auto dealers in the time that I've spent with them that if we need additional revenue for roads, that you just increase the statewide registration or titling fee and let that money be distributed evenly so that everybody's paying the same amount. So on behalf of the auto dealers, that is our concern. The larger issue that I think you ought to consider before going forward, and I should say we're not necessarily opposed to the bill. We're opposed to the underlying change that will occur if the bill passes, which is counties will start adopting registration fees. So I'm not testifying against the bill in terms of removing that statutory requirement. We're simply acknowledging that if you do that, it is much more likely that a county will have a registration fee where they don't have them now. One of the things that I hope that you'll consider when deciding whether or not to move forward with this bill is, and that's the next step, and that's 2 years from now or 4 years from now, you're going to have counties coming back, and they're going to be two different kinds of counties. There'll be the counties that don't have a registration fee, and they're going to come in, and they're going to ask for more highway trust fund money because they don't have a county registration fee. And they're going to point to the counties that do and say, they're raising money for themselves, so why don't you give us a larger share of the state piece of that pie because we don't have the money they do, the haves and the have-nots. And as you know, the distribution of the highway trust fund money is a very delicate balance with significant political implications. Those counties that do have a county registration fee are going to come and say, look, our people have stepped up to the plate. Our people are paying for an additional registration fee. We want additional matching funds, or we believe that as a county we should get more money from the highway trust fund because we've stepped up to the plate and we've done some things at the county level. So my concern on your behalf would be as you make this step forward that you begin to think of how you're going to sort of arbitrate between the counties that do have more money and those that don't, now that some will be able to adopt this and others clearly don't feel like they'll be able to do it politically. And that will create, I think, an interesting discussion for the legislature in the future when that occurs. So and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. I guess, go ahead, Representative.
Madam Chair, so through all of these years, no counties have ever implemented any of these licensure fees by vote. Is that what we understand?
I don't know, but we do have the counties. AOC is here, and they can tell us. I guess at this point in time, my question to you might be that we already have the haves and have-nots in the state, and I don't see them complaining about the distribution formula at this point in time, so I'm not really sure that that's something we're going to see. Why would you think that it would be different?
Madam Chair, the haves and the have-nots in that no counties now have a registration fee. And so all the counties are on an even playing field in terms of the distribution of the highway trust fund money and in terms of how that money is allocated, as I understand it. If you have a system where four or five counties now have a registration fee and other counties don't, then those counties that do have an additional registration fee will have an additional source of revenue for transportation funding projects that some counties don't have. So that would create a system where some counties have countywide money that they can spend, while the counties that don't have a registration fee will not have that money. And so I believe those counties that don't have that additional registration fee will feel like they ought to get a bigger share of the state pie because they have less revenue available, and that those counties that do have the additional registration fee would believe that they ought to get the same or a larger share of the pie because they're
doing more in their county to improve their roads. So it just I believe would be a political discussion on whether or not that revenue sharing formula ought to change or not. And it's not that that's a bad discussion to have. I just believe that when different counties have registration fees and some don't, that probably will be a discussion you'll end up having.
Well, and again, I'm not sure how that would be different than local governments having a gas tax, which is happening all over now. So I'm not sure that particular concern is that valid of a concern. Not that there aren't many other concerns there, but I'm not sure about that one. But Representative, no comment? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Art Schlack and Al Switzer, if you come up and finish it off for us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Pleasure to be here. With me today is, oh, by the way, for the record, my name is Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Working Counties. And with me this afternoon is Al Switzer, Commissioner from Klamath County, and he is also the chair of AOC's Transportation Steering Committee. And, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Switzer for him to make his statement, and then I'd like to respond to a couple of questions that have been posed to try and give you some answers at this point, with your indulgence.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, I am Al Switzer, Klamath County Commissioner. I'd like to refer back to Representative Hunt's comments. It is true that secured rural schools is going to cause a great deal of pain in the counties. Our particular county is going to lose about 65% of our road funds. And so any tool that we could have is going to be ones that we will look at using. As far as this particular bill, these are fees, and we have the ability today to raise fees. In fact, I can tell you, just having gone through about a two-month process of raising planning fees, that you can do it if you do it right. And we brought in the building community, the developers, the real estate community, and just the ordinary folks who buy houses, and sat down with them and said, this is what we need to run planning. It's a general fund drain. We've got to do something to continue to give this service. Here's our proposal. What do you think of it? 2 months later, we did enact fees. I will tell you they weren't the fees we started with, but when the process was done, it worked out fairly well. We are going to have to look at life a little different without secured rural schools. And that's going to be throughout the state. And it's not just going to be the counties. It will be the cities, and it will be ODOT. We share revenue with ODOT. We share revenue with our incorporated cities. And as that revenue drops, so is that percentage going to drop. So the idea of just being counties that are going to be hurt, that's just the tip of this iceberg, and it's a fairly large iceberg. So our association is endorsing House Bill 3082. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm pleased to indicate to you that AOC does support House Bill 3082. We continue to look at trying to provide additional revenue for the state as a whole, but we recognize that may not be possible at the level that we would like to see. And so that providing additional opportunities locally to enhance revenue for transportation is something that we think local government, cities and counties should have. Right now we have a little bit of an unbalanced playing field, if you will, because state statute requires counties to refer to voters if they wish to consider a registration fee increase or a gas tax prior to its implementation. The cities, our cousins of the cities at this point, can implement a gas tax, and then if there is concern in the community about that gas tax, then they can take out a petition and have it referred to the voters. So it's a little different, even though we're both local governments. With respect to, Madam Chair, with respect to Representative Butler's question, has any counties tried to do a registration? I made a call and found out that Benton County, 2 years ago, tried a registration fee increase. Unfortunately, that registration fee increase, which was modest, $10, I believe, failed at this point. So it, you know, it didn't go into effect. It was referred, and that's the only one that I'm aware of at this point that's been referred to the voters. We'll continue to check. Want to also mention again that I believe it was 1999, 10 or 8 counties referred a gas tax to the ballot. Only one of those counties was on the east side of the mountains, that being Umatilla County. And all of those gas taxes, be it in the valley or southern Oregon or the coast or on the east side, they all were on the ballot at the same time, and they all went down. One of the things that I would point out to you, Madam Chair, is the registration is a little different than the gas tax. Registration is, you get that bill once a year when you pay, you know, when you pay your registration, and it's part of the DMV kind of thing. And so it's like you pay your bill one time, and you might cuss about it. Why is it so big? But it's not every time you go to the pumps. And I think the two are a little different in terms of their impact, at least in terms of the perception of the community. And the fact that if a county does choose to raise the registration, I think that perception might make it more palatable to the community in which, you know, within that county due to that circumstance at this point. So I think there's a plus side. I certainly think that counties will look at this both throughout the state. Needless to say, it would have varying degrees of impact because of the number of registered vehicles within those counties at this point. But I think it's a very viable opportunity that the counties will explore, and they'll need to do that in a very serious manner, Madam Chair, members of the committee, because they will not only have to communicate with the public about the viability of what they're looking at and how that money would be spent, but they're going to have to coordinate with the cities. Recall that 40%, unless there's an agreement otherwise, 40% of any registration goes to the cities within the county. So the county's going to have to do a real coordination job working with the cities within that county to get their support and to specify how those funds would be used at this point. So I think there's a real, selling job, coordination job that a county will have to undertake before it adopts an ordinance to do a registration fee. Let me just address one more issue in terms of the haves and have nots. Madam Chair, I agree with you wholeheartedly. We are already in a situation of haves and have nots, even within the county family. We have a couple of counties that have gas tax. We have a lot of other counties that don't have gas tax. We have some counties that have system development charges for transportation, have other counties that have not gone there. We have some counties that have done historically property tax levies to deal with transportation, and we have other ones that have not. So even within the county family, we've got this unbalanced, if you will, have and have nots to deal with the local situation. And it's probably, it may not be the best situation, but it's reality. And I don't think we're going to get away from that. And I don't think, I would just submit to you, I don't believe registration would make that, the have and have nots situation, any more any worse than it is today or tomorrow at this point. So, Madam Chair, that would complete my comments. We would urge you to move House Bill 3082 forward and recommend a due pass.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question for Art and then a couple here for Al. Art, could you provide the committee through Judith a copy of the information that Bill Penhall and Morgan had shared with me the other day relative to the tools that either have been or that are on the books right now but they have expired that would give local governments an opportunity to go and address specific areas and because you might have you might have areas that would be interested in doing certain things and those probably need amendments, and I don't know whether or not relating to registration of vehicle fees is the one, but there's a bill over in revenue right now that we can use to do that, and I would like to have this committee at least to consider that, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Now follow up with Mr. Schweitzer, Commissioner Schweitzer, if I may. Al, you mentioned that with regard to your building fees, you went out, you had a couple of months worth of hearings, probably some preconceived idea of what it was going to be, presenting that, having that massaged as you worked with the various public groups. How many hearings total over a couple of months?
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, I'm guessing probably 8 to 10. We actually went out and hired a consultant to look at our fees. We didn't like the work product. It was not a very good work product, but it had nothing to do with the fees. So we went back and analyzed them ourselves and came up with a lesser figure. Went to the communities that I said, and you have to realize in Klamath, we have no SDCs. We're working on that also. So we're a little bit behind the curve on this because we've had road dollars. So this was kind of a new thing for people, but we get O&C money for our general fund. And so our general fund is taking a 15% cut. And that anything that's in that general fund then is suspect. Well, that's sheriff and, you know, all the way down. So we decided what we wanted to do was find out what our true costs were. And that's what we did. We went back and found our true cost. And we decided, ultimately, since this had not been done for over 10 years, to set a threshold of not more than 25% increase total cost of all the fees. However, within the fees, you might have some that raised 30-35%, some that raised 10. And that's how we handled it.
A follow-up question for me. Al, when you were done with this and pass it by county commission, because that's one of the things that you can do as a county commission by passing those fees, if you decided, and you certainly have the ability to do that, to have gone out to the people, not everybody's going to have a building fee every year, not everybody's going to have to come and really do much about building fees. Do you think it would have passed if the people would have had an opportunity to vote on it?
Chair Beyer, Representative Butler, I think that one would have. The one I think maybe might not have is we had to raise our landfill fees because the tipping fees went up. More people use the landfill than they do building fees. And I think that one might have been more controversial as far as overall people in the community. But at the same time, again, we had to go out and prove to them that these were true costs. And they are, and so that was what we did.
And finally, Madam Chair, I think Art probably has proved the point of my concerns, and that is that previously the current law that we're dealing with that deals with the ordinance of the registration fee is limited to $10, and that's what we're working on over in revenue to see if we can get it moved up to $54. The concern I've got is that one county, Benton County, has already tried to do it by vote. I don't know what the vote was, but the people turned it down. If 8 counties came for a gas tax referral and they were all turned down at the same time, I think that we could learn something from what's happened in Klamath County. you do a couple of studies on it, one independent, one with in-house that gives you a better feel for, so that the commissioners are really invested. They're immersed in what's going on, and then you have the public hearings. And they're not just public hearings. And I guess, knowing what I know about Klamath County and the size, fourth largest county in the state, that they probably had some hearings other than that, the courthouse in Klamath Falls. So they did some outreach to some folks in the community, and then in that process, they got the sense that people felt, that they were invested in it and needed to come and be part of the solution. And I think that's really what all of this surrounds, is that if you just say, hey, we've decided here's the tax, and you're going to pay it because we have the ability to do that, and you put that out to a vote, and people turn you down, they're not invested in it. And that's what concerns me about any time we start talking about taking away the right of the people to vote. Madam Chair, you live in a community where the people, even though they didn't have the need to do it, were given an opportunity to vote on a tax in the last year or two. And the people said overwhelmingly, not just no, but by golly, hell no. And my concern is that these kinds of taxes, that was a cell tax is what it was, cellular tax, I believe in Springfield. Springfield, okay, whatever.
We've been much more successful since then.
Okay. Well, I mean, and in Benton County, I think they had a cell tax proposal up on the votes there. Again, the city did not have to put it out to the people, and whether they proposed it and it was referred, I don't know. But the people turned it down. In a community I live in, the city council came and said, we're going to impose a tax by our own, by fiat, we're going to impose a sales tax. We have a right to do that. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to take away some of your property taxes. We'll reduce property taxes by as much as 10% of the city's share of the property tax, and then everybody will pay a sales tax. Basically, it was a tax that would have pitted our city versus the county. 10,000 people in Ontario versus 30,000 people that live in the balance of the county. The concern I have is that when these kinds of things are forced upon people, and really what happened was that they said this is a slam dunk because people are going to get a property tax reduction, 70% of the people are going to be in favor of it. Well, 70% of the people came out and voted no. And my concern is it's a sales job. And in the past, obviously, we haven't been doing such a good sales job. And to remove from the responsibility of local governments the responsibility of doing the sales job is what we're saying is that you don't have to do the sales job anymore. Just ask them to come back and see if they want your jobs. And I just don't think that's the way to run government. I really don't. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3082. And if the committee would indulge me for a little bit, we had one more bill on the schedule, and I might carry some of it over, but I do know we have a couple people in the audience that aren't usually here in the building. So if we would be willing to go ahead and listen to a little bit of testimony on this, and then I'll carry the rest of it over till Wednesday. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3380. And who do I want to call up here? Thank you. And Judith, let us know what we're talking about.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 3380 removes from the definition of commercial motor vehicle those vehicles that are owned, leased, or operated under contract with a mass transit district or transportation district when the vehicle is being used to transport passengers for hire, regardless of the number of passengers and regardless of the size of the vehicle. We have received a no revenue impact. We're still waiting on the fiscal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I'm here today as the Executive Secretary of the Oregon Transit Association. In 1978, the Oregon Transit Association was formed by the state's three largest providers as a nonprofit association to represent transit interests at the state capitol. Today, we have over 70 member organizations, big and small, across the state and beyond. I come to you today in support of House Bill 3380. This is an issue that affects many of my small members, as well as my bigger members that contract with small nonprofit providers of special transportation services. House Bill 3380 removes a requirement from the Commercial Vehicle Code that certain nonprofit providers of special transportation services must acquire a commercial driver's license, even when they are not driving a commercial vehicle. Many of the small nonprofit providers of special transportation, including Ride Connection, also testifying today in support of this bill, commonly use minivans and other small vehicles to transport seniors and those with disabilities. These small vehicles do not qualify as vehicles requiring a CDL. However, under the current law, certain providers that receive funds from and are under contract with mass transit districts, for example, TriMet Lane Transit District or Salem-Keizer Transit, these are at risk of being required to have CDLs for all their operators, regardless of the size of their vehicle. For many of the small dial-a-ride services in rural communities, requiring a CDL for non-commercial vehicles poses some major obstacles and makes providing this crucial but expensive service nearly impossible. In order to take the commercial driver's license test, you must test in a commercial motor vehicle. A 16-passenger van is an example of that. Many of these providers don't have access to a commercial motor vehicle, and it would impose a burden on them to rent a vehicle to take a test in a vehicle they will never use to transport people. As we have testified in this committee before, the need for senior and disabled transportation is growing exponentially while funds are not. This industry cannot afford an unnecessary financial burden, such as renting a van to take a driver's test. This is only one concern. Elaine Wells, Executive Director of Ride Connection, brought this issue to the attention of the association late last year when she began to worry she may be operating in noncompliance. In 1992, Oregon DMV issued Ride Connection a letter stating they were exempt from CDL requirements, but DMV has refused to issue a similar letter today. Elaine's question was whether the fact that their district had a contract with a mass transit district and received funds from ODOT, Public Transit Division, required that all their drivers have a CDL. DMV said the statute states that the vehicle they use must be owned, leased by, or under contract to a transportation district before the CDL requirement applies. Since Elaine said her vehicles were not owned by, leased by, or under contract to a transportation district, DMV felt that a CDL was not required. The Oregon DMV has interpreted this confusing statute in a way that does not require a CDL for vehicles that do not fit the CDL profile. However, the nonprofit providers of special transportation services want the law clarified to avoid any question of when a CDL is required. Furthermore, we believe that the federal law governing the use of CDLs is adequate protection, and that is where we are attempting to go with House Bill 3380. In conclusion, Oregon's current statute is unnecessarily restrictive and could impede a nonprofit's ability to provide service. On behalf of the members of the Oregon Transit Association, I urge you to vote yes on House Bill 3380. Thank you.
Go ahead. Chair Beyer, committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 3380. I'm Elaine Wells. I'm the Executive Director of Ride Connection, a private nonprofit organization in the Portland area. I'm here today to urge the passage of House Bill 3380, making commercial driver's license requirements the same as the federal standard. As Kelsey said, 16 or more passengers, including the driver, with a gross vehicle weight of 26,001 pounds or more. It's a straightforward and easy for everyone to understand. Passage of House Bill 3380 cleans up language between the federal requirement and the state testing requirement for a vehicle that is under the 26,000-pound bus requirement, or a vehicle that seats under 16 passengers, like a minivan or sedan.
that is operating under contract with a mass transit district. The current statute is also not equitable. Drivers across the country drive exactly the same vehicles for exactly the same services we provide, and they are not required to have a CDL. Our drivers operate primarily minivans and 12 to 14 passenger minibuses that weigh between 8 and 10,000 pounds. We've included a picture in my written testimony depicting the two types of vehicles that are primarily used in community-based transportation services. It also singles out agencies that receive transit funding from a mass transit district only. Since the passage of this statute, a number of transportation agencies through the cities and counties have been established. These transportation agencies are not mass transit districts and are not affected by the statute. For example, a city-run transportation agency might provide a minivan to the senior center for elderly and disabled transportation services. The senior center drivers are not required in this instance to have a CDL. However, a rural provider who provides the same service in Lane County is required to have a CDL because they're under contract with Lane Transit. Trucking companies, churches, community groups, airport shuttles, and motel shuttles that have small vehicles exactly like ours are not required to have CDL licensed drivers. Passage of House Bill 3380 has no financial impact on the state, but if it does not pass, it will have a significant financial impact on small community-based transportation programs that assist mass transit districts to provide service to our elders and people with disabilities. It is imperative that the bill be passed to increase the ability to coordinate transportation services for older adults and people with disabilities. Working collaboratively with our partner agencies, mass transit districts, transportation districts, and transportation agencies to provide the most rides possible in a cost-effective manner is paramount to coordination in our region and throughout the state. Thank you for your time and for the opportunity to speak about this very important issue. And I urge passage of House Bill 3380.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Beyer, committee members, thanks for your time today. I'm Scott Gates from Metropolitan Family Service. We are a nonprofit agency providing community-based transportation in the Ride Connection Network. As a nonprofit with very low overhead, the financial impact of a commercial driver's license requirement would be a significant impact on our program. The cost for training, licensing, personnel, and compliance would directly translate into a reduction of a critical service that is provided to low-income seniors and people with disabilities. This would also make driver recruitment more difficult at a time when it is already difficult to recruit drivers. And potential staffing shortages could impact or interrupt our service to such important destinations as medical appointments and grocery shopping, putting people at an even greater risk than they already are. Given the increasing number of low-income older adults and people with disabilities, this law, as it is currently written, impacts our program at a time when needs are growing in scope and severity. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I did have one question for Elaine. Elaine, the pictures that you passed out, the one on top and the one on the bottom, these would both be exempt vehicles, is that correct? The one on top is a less than 16 passenger van, is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I am going to go ahead and
even if you want to carry it over, you can
right.
Close it.
I'm going to close the public hearing on 3380, and I'm going to carry this public hearing and work session over until Wednesday. And maybe more people will be here, and we can take care of the bill.
Okay. And that's the only one you wanted to carry over, right?
Yes.
And This is the one where we have amendments submitted, then you may not be able to vote on this day.
Oh, I'm sorry, everybody, and thank you. Thank you for hanging around, and we'll see some of you Wednesday, and thank you, committee.
Thank you.
And I close the...